Chimbonas, welcome to season 7 of La Vioca Chimbona. That's right, it's been 7 seasons of the podcast, and I absolutely would not be here still doing this if it wasn't for the dedicated listenership. So to you, dear listener, thank you so much for continuing to rock with me in these 7 years, if you can believe it. La Vioca Chimbona is an abolitionist podcast that audio archives state repression and fierce migrant resistance in the U.S.-Mexico borderlands and breaks down case law and politics from a leftist perspective. As the daughter of Salvadoran immigrants, Yvette prioritizes uplifting the voices and histories of Central Americans. On this first episode of season 7, I interviewed Joa Jacobo, who is the Southwest editor at Calo News, the central initiative of the Latino Media Collaborative. We discuss the state of Latino-led local news in Arizona, the challenges, what needs to change, and what the strengths are of the current landscape. It was a great conversation, and I was so happy to be able to reground myself in all things Arizona media, and especially Latina media. If you enjoy this episode and you want to support the podcast, you can join the online Patreon community. It's the only way that you can support the podcast monetarily. As you all know, this is a 100% independently run podcast. I host, I produce, I do it all. I do the social media. And the only way that I'm able to make this sustainable, the only way that I'm able to continue putting out regular content is through the Patreon. So thank you so much to the folks that have joined this year. Please, if you can find it in your wallet, if you can give up 1 coffee a month, you would become one of my favorite people. Please join the Patreon community. Ultimately, if I don't keep getting support from the Patreon, I will eventually have to shutter these doors, and it would kill me, absolutely kill me, if I had to do that. I don't do corporate ad space because I like the independence, the freedom that I have to say whatever I want on the podcast without being worried about what the corporate ad overlords have to say about it. I do believe that being listener funded allows me to keep the political integrity of the podcast intact. So please, please go to the episode show notes. That's where you'll find the Patreon link, or you can just go on the website patreon.com/radiocachimbona. Can Google it, super easy, and become a Patreon. Another 100% free way that you can support the podcast is by leaving an Apple Podcast or Spotify rating. It helps the podcast gain new listeners, and it's another way to elevate the standing of the podcast. The link I forgot to mention that the link for the Patreon is also always in my bio on Instagram. Please follow at La Vioca Chimbona on Instagram, X, and Facebook. Thank you to Grant Bloom for the intro and for the audio editing, as always. Just wanted to take a quick second to again thank everyone for sticking with me. I'm super excited about this new season. There's a lot of things I'm cooking up, including a focus on Los Angeles, my home for the last year, discussing the ICE raids that have occurred here, the recent Supreme Court ruling that has essentially legalized racial profiling of Latinx people in LA. And that's just one of the little treats that I have for you all this season. It's going to be good. It's going to be hard hitting. It's going to be critical, as always. I hope to share a bit of the scholarship that I've been working on too, as the Laura Gomez Fellow at UCLA Law. And just super excited also to get back into the Lit Review and share some awesome texts with y'all, get reading and talking, which is my favorite thing to do. So stay tuned. I hope that you all enjoy this episode, and you'll be hearing from me soon. Thanks, cachimbonas. Bye. Hello, cachimbonas. Today, I'm very excited to have Joa Jacobo on to discuss the state of Latino-led local news in Arizona and beyond. Joa was born in Santa Ana, California, and was raised for most of her childhood and teenage years in Zacatecas, Mexico. She is the Southwest editor at Calo News, the central initiative of the Latino Media Collaborative, and is also an instructor at the University of Arizona, where she teaches the history of Latina media within the U.S. She has over a decade of experience in the news industry and has focused on representing marginalized and historically underrepresented people, particularly Latina and immigrant communities, by growing coverage and developing projects that help newsroom staff build trust in the neighborhoods where they work and live. She previously worked as the Communities and Bilingual Initiatives Editor at La Voz Arizona and the Arizona Republic, leading bilingual coverage and piloting community-focused projects aimed at engaging Latina-identifying and Spanish-speaking Phoenix residents. Her work has appeared in La Opinión and Excelsior California. She obtained her master's in social innovation from the University of San Diego and her bachelor's in print journalism from Cal State Northridge. Joa, thanks so much for coming onto the podcast today.
Yeah, thanks, Yvette. Thank you for having me.
We're speaking in anticipation of an event that is being hosted by the Latino Media Collaborative at ASU, which is the State of Latino-Led Local News in Arizona and Beyond. So to sort of start this conversation, I wanted to ask you, what is the State of Latino-Led Local News in Arizona?
Yeah, of course, that is the question, right? Mm-hmm. So before I go into that, I do want to mention that we are going to go like fully into detail in all of those things, the state, the current landscape, the challenges, the opportunities that many Latina outlets in Arizona face during the event. So definitely if you're in the area, please try to join us. It is free. But some of the things that I do want to touch on is that, you know, we live in the state of Arizona where over more than 2 million Latinas reside, according to recent census figures. But access to important, impactful, culturally relevant information is like a huge challenge, right? Just to kind of give you an idea of that, only 11% of outlets in Arizona target Latinas. And that's, you know, where 2 million out of 7 million live. That is a huge, you know, obstacle for folks to obtain important information. And we have major corporate outlets, you know, broadcast outlets like Telemundo and Univision, the way we see them in the majority of U.S. states, right? But one of the really great things about Arizona is that we have a huge chunk of small and independently run Latina-led outlets, the majority of them which are, you know, offering content in Spanish. And if you look at the history of Arizona and, you know, mostly it's anti-immigrant history, really, that makes a lot of sense, right? For the majority of these outlets to focus on sharing information with folks who primarily speak Spanish or who prefer to consume their news in Spanish, right? We have a history of, you know, former Maricopa Sheriff Joe Arpaio and SB 1070, mm-hmm. and policies that really targeted immigrants and Latinas. And that those events really led to many outlets kind of coming together, banding together to keep their communities informed. And not so much for the sake of, oh, this is news, we have to do it, which is already a huge responsibility that anyone in the news industry bears, but also because we are a part of those communities, right? And we are also, like, our livelihoods, our safety, our communities are at stake. So, you know, you have these, many of these outlets that have existed, that were either existed before those events occurred or that really blossomed during those events because they were able to garner the trust of their communities, right?
Yeah, that's really great. As a side note, why do you use the word Latine? I know this is like an ongoing debate, and I like to use Latinx, and I teach a seminar at UCLA Law called Latinx People in the Law. And we discuss the emergence of Latine as a descriptor. And I'm always curious about why people choose Latine over other identifiers.
Yeah, this is so funny because this is a conversation we're having this week in my class too. but it's a personal preference for me because having been raised in Mexico, I understand that the X isn't something that comes naturally to Spanish speakers. And we are seeing a wave more in Latin America where folks tend to gravitate toward the E instead of the X, even when it comes to like changing gendered language, right? So like we've seen, for example, the word compañerex, right? To say compañeros or compañeras, and folks are choosing to use instead compañeres. Right. So it obviously is to be more inclusive of our, of, you know, of everyone. But it is just because X doesn't roll off my tongue as naturally as the E does.
Okay. Interesting. Now that we have that out of the way, so it sounds like there's a small hub of independent Latino, Latine, Latinx-led media outlets. And you mentioned that many of them blossomed during the, you know, one of the peaks of anti-immigrant sentiment in Arizona. Are these news outlets operating bilingually, primarily in Spanish or English? And also, you mentioned that there's a big consumer base of people who want to consume their news in Spanish. I'm also wondering if there are outlets that are geared towards English dominant Latinx people. Because, as you know, Arizona is a place where multi-generations of Latinx people live. Used to be Mexico. There's a big contingent of people that actually have always resided there and maybe have since the solidification of the border, maybe have lost touch with their Mexican roots and maybe don't speak Spanish. Are there news outlets that cater to that population?
Yeah, absolutely. To touch on your first ask, yes. So a lot of the outlets that we saw, you know, circa 2010, predominantly reported their news in Spanish, right? The Latina-led newsrooms. We saw that a lot with like Prensa Hispana, which has kind of turned into Prensa Arizona. You had, you know, La Voz at the time before it was bought by the Arizona Republic and Gannett. So you had different newsrooms that really focused on sharing information and sharing resources with predominantly Spanish-speaking communities, primarily because, you know, they focused on immigrant communities, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which makes a lot of sense. And as years have gone by, we've seen, obviously, the growth of these platforms, the emergence of other platforms, also heavily focused in Spanish. But we've also seen a few that have emerged to address that information gap for the bilingual folks, right? Or folks who predominantly consume their news in English, right? So you have outlets like Arizona Luminaria, who their operations are based in Southern Arizona. And, you know, they do publish bilingual content, but the majority of it is in English, precisely because they understand that many, you know, children of immigrants and, you know, folks that come from generations of immigrants prefer to consume their news in English, or probably can only consume their news in English, right?
Right.
Because Spanish wasn't passed down to everyone. So you have those kinds of newsrooms. You have others like the Tucson Spotlight that also has a Spanish language component and is very well divided, you know, their coverage in both languages. But what we have seen, and this is kind of what we at Galo News have kind of stepped in to really fill the gap, is that part, right? That part that you mentioned, that there are many folks that who only want to consume that in English. And is there an outlet that predominantly focuses on that? And the reality is that there isn't, right? There isn't one that really focuses on the entirety of Arizona. You have smaller outlets that are very like regional focused. Luminaria, for example, only focuses on like Pima County, Pinal County, mm-hmm. Those southern areas. Also, Tucson Spotlight is focused on Tucson, right? So we saw that opportunity to come out and say, okay, well, Galo News as a whole has like covered LA for the past 2 years, kind of in that same spirit. So having the chance to really build trust and build community in Phoenix, we said, okay, we can step in here, provide mostly English language coverage of these communities, and really grow, you know, that trust in Latine-led news for folks of that same community.
So you just went over the gap that Galo News is trying to fill. What else is missing from the current media landscape in Arizona that's targeted towards Latinas?
I think I had thought about this question, and in my head it was like, what's missing in order to support us? But not so much like what's missing from what's already existent, right?
Yeah, you can answer it as like, what is missing? Like, what do you need to thrive? That also works.
Okay, yeah. So, you know, kind of mentioned going off with like the previous response, we are missing more of this very focused coverage of our community when it comes to like the basic arts and culture, really, diving into community and going into those spaces that we traditionally wouldn't, right? And like mainstream outlets or more legacy outlets, like, for example, the Arizona Republic, right? So we're missing that space of like understanding where our culture or folks in our community tend to like gravitate toward, right? So if you look at Phoenix, for example, you have spaces like El Mercado de los Cielos, which is in West Phoenix. You have El Tianguis de los Perros in downtown. And I mean, if you Google them, it is very rare that you'll see any stories related to them, unless it's like something negative, right? Or something that has some very severe issue where they talk to folks in those communities or in those spaces. So when we look at what's missing in our landscape, we're really missing that part of belonging, of community that folks want to feel attached to when it comes to English language stories, right? We find that excessively in Spanish language reporting. Of course, why wouldn't we, right? But we want to see that in English too. Folks like, you know, myself, who I am bilingual and thankfully I can, you know, read and consume things in both languages, but that's not the case for everyone. And sometimes I prefer only to read English, right? So where are those really good stories about our community and the successes that they're having? And just, you know, that cultural movement that's happening around us in English, right? So that's definitely something that we're missing when it comes to English language, Latina-led news, right? But also when it comes to just, you know, our industry and our landscape, looking at it, you know, it is a breath of fresh air to see so many newsrooms leading coverage for our communities in Arizona that are independently run. It is beautiful to see that, right? But it's important to understand the challenges they face to stay afloat, right? And as a whole, the industry is struggling, obviously. It's struggling to remain relevant and trustworthy in a digital age when they have to compete with like social media algorithms and, you know, AI outperforming us in many ways, right? Maybe 5 years ago, we didn't foresee how impactful AI would be, but here we are, right? And, you know, add to the fact that many of these newsrooms, small newsrooms, aren't owned by billionaires, which is, you know, arguably a good thing. but, you know, that does mean that outlets, smaller outlets like Galo News as well, rely heavily on grants and donations and outside funding, right? So I think when it comes to that, we have to really look at the fact that we are smaller newsrooms. Really means that we have to, aside from like reporting the news, right? There is an incredible responsibility to truly connect with our readers, with our viewers, with our listeners. And, you know, in addition to putting out news, right? What's the point of putting something out if you're not going to take the time to connect with folks, right? Like that's always something that we think about is what's in it for them. If they consume this, why would they want to, right? And if we're stepping into a community the way that Galo News is doing now, right, we have to do that in a way that makes folks feel that we are also a part of this community, right? We can't just, as you know, they say, parachute in and do some coverage and then walk away, right? And I think that's one of the things that makes Latina-led newsrooms super important. We work in an industry that is very cutthroat, right? That tells us that we need to step away from the story, that we cannot involve ourselves, that we need to remain neutral, which is, it's not a way for us to move forward, right? It's not a way for us to really truthfully and in the most representative way possible tell stories. I think the majority of folks who work in this space and who work in Latina-led newsrooms understand that by bringing in our sense of community, our sense of belonging and identity, we're able to tell our stories better, right? So I think that's one of the things that really sets us apart in many ways and most ethnic media outlets in this way is that we are covering our communities, but we're also advocates for our communities.
Right. There's a lot of things that you said that I want to touch on. You mentioned that something that's missing from the coverage of Latina communities is English speaking cultural spaces. Why do you think that there's a dearth of those spaces existing, or is it that reporters, for whatever reason, are not tuned in to those spaces.
Excuse me. Oh my God. Yes. So those spaces exist, right? Mm-hmm. We have so many across the valley. And they're independently successful because of the communities that surround them, that support them. It's because our reporters, and I mean this as in the industry as a whole, aren't part of those communities. They don't know them. And maybe they just don't feel comfortable enough to step into them, right? And that's fair, right? That's sometimes fair. Like if, you know, you're a white reporter and you're like, I'm really going to step into this space, you know, and do this story, right? I mean, it could be it could be kind of nerve-wracking for folks who aren't familiar, right?
Yeah. Or they probably just wouldn't be invited in the first place, which is
exactly
probably
right?
The real issue. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And kudos to them for understanding that too, right? Mm-hmm. But so when it comes to English language reporting, in your typical outlets, you know, 12 News, The Republic, New Times, whatever, they may not have that kind of, you know, como se dice?
They don't like have those connects. They don't have
they don't have that connection, that relationship to really go into those communities and those spaces. When it comes to Spanish language reporting, obviously there is that, right? But also sometimes we find that in Spanish language reporting, a lot of the journalists are older.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've noticed that too.
And they don't necessarily connect with younger generations, with, you know, Gen Zs and younger millennials, right?
No.
So it's also difficult for them to step into spaces and truly connect, right?
Right. Yeah. So do you think that the English speaking spaces are generally younger led?
I absolutely do. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's something that we're seeing a lot, right? Like, for example, not too long ago, we covered a drag show. I don't know if you're familiar with TQ Pueblo, Trans Queer Pueblo.
Trans Queer Pueblo are my dearest allies. yes. I write about them a lot in my scholarship. Yes, they're very near and dear to my heart.
I love that, yes. Mm-hmm. So we're huge fans of them too. but like, you know, we covered their annual drag show.
So important.
Yes, where they fundraise for, you know, to continue their services and supporting immigrant communities, the LGBTQ plus community. And we were practically the only newsroom there. I'm unfamiliar if another outlet actually covers this. But that, for example, that's just one example, right? Where we know Spanish language newsrooms are not going to step into that, right? For a bajillion reasons, right? And we can you know, talk about like cultural norms and stereotypes within the Latina community alone, and taboo topics and all of that, right? Which is super important and maybe another conversation. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when it comes to English language outlets, there is also this line that, again, in the news industry, you are taught not to cross, where it is, okay, this is a farly left-leaning progressive organization who calls for the abolishment of ICE, the abolishment of police, all the things. So maybe as, you know, an outlet, a mainstream outlet, we're not going to go there either. Right. Even though this is a public event, they could have, you know, gone after, you know, reaching out to the organizers. But so we find a lot of that, right? And where we're trying to step in a little bit is, okay, we need to cover this in English, right? There's so many young folks, and even not young folks, like the older millennials, older generations that just want to read their news in English and probably don't trust mainstream news anymore, right?
Yeah.
So that's kind of where we're trying to really step in and say, okay, we can do this a little bit differently than traditional news has done. And here's what we have to offer. And hopefully, you know, we're able to, you know, build that trust, continue building that trust, and And I think it's going fairly decently for us, having started barely like 2 months ago.
Yeah, I think that's super important. And it reminds me of the importance of language justice, because, and it's something that TQP does really well, is making their spaces bilingual and accessible. Mm-hmm. Even though many of the organizers are Spanish dominant speakers, they make an effort actually to make their spaces bilingual and accessible to others. And I think they want to have that crossover reach to predominantly English speaking communities. And their TQP is such a leader, a visionary leader in terms of building a future, an actually inclusive future for immigrants. And it's something that everybody should be paying attention to, not just those who are Spanish speaking. And so I love that you're engaging in English language coverage of their work, because it's super, super important. And oftentimes, because of our language differences, we are siloed in the work that we do. And it really prevents us from making connections and alliances across language.
Yeah, 100%. I agree. And that's also why, you know, taking a step outside of your regular operations as a newsroom, sorry, not regular, but like normalized, right? Mm-hmm. Operations as a newsroom, right? We're trying to build off that, right? A little bit more of that. And that could potentially look like, we haven't yet gotten to this level, but there are conversations around, okay, how do we partner with local organizations that aren't your typical organizations that people partner with, right? Newsrooms tend to partner with, or traditional newsrooms tend to partner with, like housing organizations, you know, feed the children organizations, that kind of, those kinds of spaces that are generally and on a wider scope approved of by the public, and doesn't make the news organization seem like they're leaning in any sort of direction, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. So when it comes to the work that we're doing, we're kind of stepping away from that and saying, okay, we have our own values. We understand that we are a part of our Latina immigrant communities. A lot of our staff are immigrants themselves. So we need to actually stand by that and mm-hmm. begin partnering with those organizations too. Yeah. Mm.
I love this. And it gets back to another thing that you said earlier that I wanted to bring up, which is this idea of neutrality within journalism. And it's something that I think about a lot as a scholar, because there are also these debates happening within academia about how, basically the question is like, how do we arrive at truth? Is it by taking on this detached persona, which, if we're honest, is constructed around the white male? Mm-hmm. Or do we embrace our inherent subjectivity and just lean into it and find the truths that come out of that? And it sounds like Galo's sort of leaning into the prior, and wanted to ask, like, do you feel like you get taken less seriously in the journalism world because of this? And what motivates you to break this norm?
Yeah. You know what? Not at all. At least not in the spaces that we care about, right? Mm-hmm. Where we care to be noticed. And that speaks to the amazing work that, for example, LA Taco has been doing in Los mm-hmm. Angeles, that the LA Public Press has been doing as well. They are Latina-led. They have seen the urgency and immediacy of coverage needed during the current political climate, and have said, you know what, we're doing this because our community needs it. We're going to tell things as they are, as we see them, and that's it. So we're kind of really taking a page out of what they're doing, to be completely honest, because it is so important. Again, as I mentioned, we're Latinas, right? We are immigrants. We are queer. And it's super important to, why would you not stand with your community and report it as it is? Because all of this impacts you too, impacts us too, right? Mm-hmm. So when we talk about kind of going outside of the usual routine of traditional newsrooms, you know, with their objectivity and neutrality, and as you said, that is centering the view of a white cis man.
Yeah. Well, because they're the only people that are considered detached and neutral and objective.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So that does not fall in line with who we are, with our values. You know, we're the central initiative of the Latino Media Collaborative, which in itself is the main mission of it, is to strengthen and empower our Latina media landscape across the U.S. Mm-hmm. How can we do that if we don't, you know, prioritize the values and the issues that our community faces?
You've been touching on this already a bit. You know, you mentioned what coverage needs to increase, but wanted to ask if you had anything else to expand on in terms of what could be done to strengthen Latino-led local news in Arizona.
Yeah. So several things, right? And I really wish I could share the report we have, which we won't make available until after the event. But we touch on several things, you know, expanding grants and access to resources, because the main thing that we struggle with is resources, right?
Yeah.
We don't have enough folks to send out into the field and cover these amazing stories that need to be told. But one of the things I did want to highlight is, you know, our researchers at the Latino Media Collaborative have found the opportunity for states to really get involved, the states that we operate in, to support our efforts, right? And that is a big ask, considering what is happening on a national level with publicly funded media like NPR, right, and budget cuts. But there is space for states to kind of do something in that regard, and that comes in the shape of policies that direct public funding into our operations, right? You have states like California, mm-hmm. that in 2024 passed a bill that requires state officials to increase ad spending in ethnic media outlets. That's major. That mm-hmm. is major, right? Mm-hmm. And that helps, you know, we live off of ads, we live off of clicks and page views and whatnot. So that helps us out a lot. you have other states like Illinois that created an employment tax credit to support local news and made a commitment to invest in hiring local reporters instead of like bringing outside talent, right? And while that only focuses on local and doesn't really specify ethnic, we're still local news, right? So that benefits us in a way as well. So when you look at the Southwest and you look at Arizona, Nevada, New Mexico, which are the states that we're really focused on, you don't have any of that. Arizona has never had any sort of bill proposal, you know, submitted at the legislature to support anything like that.
Yeah.
Nevada and New Mexico have had a few attempts. Nevada specifically had one early this year. This is recent, where, you know, they tried to provide or make it so that the state could provide some funding for rural communities, a lot of which are, you know, Spanish speaking, to help them invest in, you know, supporting their operations. That was vetoed by the governor. So we see that it is possible to create some sort of program like that. It's just a matter of, you know, if the states are willing, legislators, lawmakers are willing to you know, create something like that for us. Mm-hmm. With the state of Arizona, when you have a Republican-led legislature, that yeah. gets increasingly more difficult, right? And that policy component is also something that the LMC focuses on too, our leadership with Arturo Carmona and Esperanza Guevara are really focusing on, you know, pushing that kind of policy and those kinds of ideas at the legislative level at these states so that we can, you know, build a stronger ecosystem for folks like us.
That's great.
It is also,
well, bless their really hearts, quick, trying to do something productive in the Arizona State Legislature.
I know. Also, another thing that I wanted to mention is what could be done, and this is really more of a collaborative effort, is the power of partnership is huge.
Yeah.
And I say this again, you know, working in a newsroom that does not function like many others. And also as a person who used to work in corporate media, right? So stepping away from that has been a breath of fresh air. But it's important to note how powerful that can be. And not to keep touting LMC, but we have a network of partners and we work with them. That's something that we recently established. It's more focused on like building skills and career development and all of that to help strengthen their operations. But we're also beginning to talk about working on collaborative like reporting projects, right? And that's not new. That has happened in many spaces before. But we are trying to commit to make it so that any type of work that we do, for example, at Calo, that can be republished anywhere else and vice versa. And I think that there is a significant impact when it comes to that kind of story sharing. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, we are a public service. Newsrooms are a public service, or at least we're supposed to function that way.
Yeah.
Right? We're supposed to report the news. We're supposed to share information, share resources with our community members. And I think many newsrooms function in a way where, yes, they understand that, but also they have competitors. We all have competitors. And in a capitalist society that we live in, it's understandable that that's, the overall rule. But it's also important to remind ourselves, okay, if the goal is to get this information out there, how better than to work with other newsrooms and share the same information so that twice, four times, five times the amount of people can get access to that, right? We all have different communities that we're able to reach. Mm-hmm. So why not share that load? So I think in that regard, we've been trying to build a lot more off of that. And also everyone has different skills and talents, and it's wonderful to see three different newsrooms come together. And one is like an expert in data visualization. And the other one is great at like mining through loads of data. And the other one is really great at talking to people and finding stories where you otherwise wouldn't. Right. So that has been beautiful to be a witness of and to be able to work toward. And I say that because we're currently kind of working on that. There's a great group of Latina journalists that came together kind of naturally over the last year in Arizona. We call ourselves Las Fronterizas. Mm-hmm. I don't know how that happened, but it is it just happened. And you have like really great folks in this group, like Maritza Felix with Conecta Arizona, Liliana López-Ruelas with Somos Tucson, which is also an emerging newsroom in Tucson. And you have like Laura Madrid, who is the owner of La Onda Radio. So we have different amazing, powerful women who run news outlets here in Arizona. And one day we're just like, what if we just like partner and collaborate on all the things? And that's been beautiful to be a part of and to witness its growth and how open folks who work in community-focused media are willing to be in order to get their communities informed.
I love that. And I think this point about collaboration is super important, especially when I feel like different generations consume their news differently. Like, I'm interested in partnering with radio stations because they have older people listening to their stuff. And that's an audience I don't have. As a podcaster, my audience is primarily millennials and Gen Z listeners with a few Gen Xers sprinkled in. And that to me, and I know that those populations don't listen to the radio. So to me, I'm like, oh, what if my podcast was airing on one of these radio shows? You know, I think that there's a lot of opportunities for collaboration and taking advantage of how different outlets have created and catered to different audiences and using that to maximize reach.
Oh, 100%. You know, we have like a bunch of different folks in this group. I would be so happy to like invite you to this group, but you're in LA, right?
Well, oh wait, which group? Las Fronterizas?
Yes.
Oh yeah, I would love to be a part of the group, LOL. I am in LA, but I'm applying to jobs right now, so I might be moving soon, but
okay.
I really want to go back to Arizona, like so bad.
Yeah. it's nice here, right? Like it grows on you.
Yeah, Arizona hates me.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. I moved in 2018, like right after I graduated law school and was there up until last year. And I think that was part of the reason why Latino Media Collaborative reached out to me to do this interview, because I have a big still audience in Arizona, even though I did move out to LA. Just definitely would love to stay in touch and collaborate in other ways.
That would be great. Yeah. I will add you. We have a WhatsApp, of course.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So, So like going off of what you're talking about, like Conecta Arizona uses WhatsApp to communicate with folks. And they share they have a podcast too. So they share their videos there. They go live on WhatsApp. They go live on Facebook. Who else? Like, obviously, La Onda Radio is in Spanish, but also they're looking to tap into the English language market. Mm-hmm. So that would obviously benefit so many, Latinas who speak English. And then you have like several digital outlets like our own. And one of them actually runs a podcast too. So, you know, it's just so many different methods of delivery that you can, you know, benefit from when you collaborate with them.
So I wanted to focus on you now a bit more. Wanted to ask you, what inspired your journey into journalism?
It's a couple of things. Mm-hmm. I've always been a writer, mostly like poetry and short stories, which one day I will publish.
Yes.
I'm working on a novel currently, so I first have to finish that. But anyways, so I've always been a writer, like from a young age, and going into college, I didn't really know what I wanted. What I wanted to do with my life. It's such a heavy question to ask an 18-year-old. Like, what the hell do you want to do with your life?
Yeah. Like, I don't know.
I'm just trying to get by. Right. And I grew up with a dad who works in construction. So while we were living in Mexico, he was here and you know, working. He was able to start like his own plastering company with his brothers. So he like became an entrepreneur. And then when I was 18, he kind of like started on his own and started his own business and asked me to help him build that business. And this meant that I had to learn California labor codes and insurance policies and regulations and all of that. So stepping into college at that age and understanding that I have a huge responsibility to contribute to my family and their business, I said, well, I'm going to major in like business administration, right? Because obviously I want to keep, you know, helping my family. And as the eldest daughter, that is a, you know, yeah, kind of like a guaranteed position, right? Mm-hmm. So I stepped into that. And for the first 2 years of college, I was fully immersed in that. And then I took a calculus course and I said, no, because your girl is not good at math in any way, shape or form. So then I kind of, and throughout that time, I stepped away from my passion for writing because I was so focused on this, on, you know, this career path. And then when I started thinking again, like in my 20s at this point, I was like, the hell should I do? And I remember I started thinking about my writing again and, you know, started looking into careers that would really bring that out again. I remember coming across a journalism course that looked into migration patterns and flows and how the US media covered that and how that impacted the perception of folks in the US of immigrants.
Wait, is that Leo Chavez's work where he talks about how media always describes Latino immigration as a wave or a flood or an overwhelming tidal wave? It's like all these metaphors that are used are pretty consistent.
I don't recall. You mean like if he taught the course?
Oh, no.
Or if we looked at that?
If you like looked at that stuff, yeah.
We probably did. I don't remember, to be honest.
Yeah. It was a while ago.
It was a very long time ago. But the professor teaching this course is Jesse Garretis, who was formerly the director of the journalism school at the University of Arizona.
Okay, cool.
And she's Peruvian, and she's lived in Mexico and has done a billion different things. And I remember sitting in this class the first day and just seeing how energized she was with this topic and how she talked about news and the common misrepresentation that traditional media engages in when it comes to our community. And I don't know, that was it. Like I don't know what this is, like this feeling I have, but I'm here. You know, all these years later, she is still like a really good friend of mine. And she actually hired me to teach at UA at the University of Arizona. And it's been really great to go on this journey of like constantly learning and unlearning things to better serve and to better cover our people. Because that's essentially what it is, to tell these stories, right?
So what advice would you give to Latinas interested in entering the journalism field?
Trust yourself in the journey, and try, and I say try because it's very difficult, but try to stay true to the person that you are, your identity, your values, because it can be very simple for us to forget that we have them in an industry that requires us to kind of be a blanket face, right? Or blank face, sorry. It's incredibly competitive depending on what kind of newsroom you start in. And it's always important for me to remind folks that not the entire industry does not function that way, because it can be very heartbreaking for folks when they encounter that as soon as they step in, right? I think that's one of the main things. And also, it's so important to find your community. I mean, in every single space, right? In every aspect of your life, you need to have your community. When it comes to this news industry, it's so important to have people rooting for you. Because it can quickly become a situation where you don't feel that kind of support, and again, can force you to burn out, to, you know, give up, to leave. And I do think that when it comes to journalism schools, we fail in really sharing the realities of this field. It's not a great one. We struggle. You know, the lack of resources is something that impacts everyone. And unfortunately, when it comes to like downsizing and yeah. budget cuts, that impacts primarily folks of color, women, and, you know, recent hires.
Yeah.
So that's always going to be a thing that, you know, a challenge that we have to face and constantly work against, right? Work to make better. So definitely go into this field understanding that, right? Your J school professors might not tell you that that is the reality.
Yeah.
But it absolutely is, which is so important for you to find other spaces, other folks to talk to, that can, you know, be that support system that you build throughout your years and working in this field.
That's great advice. The last question I like asking people is, what is something that has been inspiring you lately? You know, these are dark times for this nation, and it's probably few and far in between that you get inspiration. But when you have recently, what has it been?
You know, this probably has nothing to do with my work.
No, that's perfect. And, we can learn another dimension of you.
Right. It has nothing to do with my work, but it kind of does at the same time, as I grow as a person. I recently picked up the Serviceberry. Oh my God, I'm spacing on her name. It's the book is called The Serviceberry, An Economy of Gifts and Reciprocity. By Robin Wall Kimmerer. And she's an Indigenous author, and she talks about or looks at the economy of gift giving, but not as like a in the material sense, but really as people who inhabit this earth in relationship to other living organisms. So plants, butterflies, what have you, right? Fruits and stuff. And, you know, stepping away from the very oppressive capitalist agenda and just being in nature and understanding that in order to better be or better cohabitate in this world, we need to be able to accept that gift giving is necessary for humans. And not in the sense, again, of like, oh, I'm going to buy this gift for you, but maybe I'm going to pick these berries for you and give them to you so that then you can bake a pie and then give it to your local book club, and then your book club can talk about those, that really great blueberry pie, and, you know, eventually write a poem about it. So it's this longevity of a gift, and its constant movement through lives, and how we can, you know, create a sense of reciprocity in the world. And I don't know why this really fascinated me. And I think it's already something that I try to live by, of like, you know, giving back as much as possible, but also not trying not to expect to receive anything in return. Right. I think that was one of the things that has inspired me lately too.
That's cool. I'm definitely going to check this book out.
try to be a better human.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Joa, thank you so much for giving me your time. When is the State of Latino-Led Media event?
It is on the 25th. Yes, September 25th.
Awesome. And it will be at ASU and is open to the public.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Joa, I hope that you come back on the podcast to continue discussing your work and everything you're doing. And thanks so much for coming on today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was such a joy to talk to you.
Bye.
Bye.